Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
It's the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, June 5th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Today is an important baseball anniversary.
I think I broke my thumb.
Hey, bada 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 bada, swing, bada. Hey, bada 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 bada, swing, bada. You can't, you can't, you can't, you can't, you can't, swing, bada.
That's right. Today is the 35th anniversary of the Ferris Bueller baseball game at Wrigley Field when Ferris Bueller and his friends took the day off. Taylor, I'm sure you've seen this movie.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites, especially growing up. I really like the, you know, as like a 9-year-old kid, like, oh, wow, what a great adventure. Obviously, it's completely outlandish, but still holds up, actually, all the way back from 1986.
Yep, exactly. And what a beautiful day that was, that they got to go to the ballpark. We would all love beautiful days like that to go to ballparks these days. Coming up, we'll be talking with Tim Kirkchin, and I'll explain how Ferris Bueller might be relevant in the current context. And I'm ready to make a stand in Todd Radom's weekly quiz. Taylor, I'm coming for you. First, a note. Major League Baseball players last night stood firm, resoundingly rejected Major League Baseball's plan. The players announced they will not take another pay cut, and as they move forward after a 2-hour conference call yesterday, it really does look like the two sides are at a complete stalemate. On Wednesday, the league had rejected a proposal from the players to play 114 games with full prorated salaries. Major League Baseball wants a drastically reduced schedule in order for owners to be able to pay players on a per-game basis, and with talks at a standstill, a hopeful July 4th start is in jeopardy. Before we get to Todd and Tim, check out the latest episode of Fantasy Focused Baseball. Kyle, Tristan, and June Lee are talking about Field of Dreams and pose the question, is it an overrated film? I kind of think that it is. Find it wherever you get your podcast.
Scene heads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkchin on Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkchin covers baseball for ESPN, and Tim, there's a lot of bad stuff to get to, so I want to start with some pleasant stuff. I want to talk about your daily baseball fix, okay? It's posted every day on ESPN.com. It's you using an anniversary, using a particular date to look at a player or a situation in the past. For example, today's daily baseball fix, which we'll hear in just a second after your segment about Chipper Jones. You know, you're digging into his past. Tell me how you prepare this and go through this every day.
Well, I look at this date in baseball history, which I find online, and then I say, okay, what's the most important thing here? Or maybe better than that, what can I tell the best story about? So May the 6th, Willie Mays was born. So that's the date. That's what we're going to do that day. And this was my opportunity to write about Chipper Jones. Sometimes there's not like the greatest thing ever that happened. So I'm looking for something else that I can connect to something that I really enjoy writing about. And virtually everything I've written out of things that I gathered myself, which makes it so much more personal for me that I didn't have to look this up. I knew because I talked to this guy, and that's what happened with Chipper Jones. All those stories in there were told directly to me, and that makes it so much more personal for me. And this is like a little personal journey for myself, and it's been an enormous amount of work and a great deal of fun.
And how much do you enjoy the respite from what else is going on?
Well, ultimately, Buster, that's why I'm doing it. I need to engage in baseball. I need to have something good happen today to me, to everyone. And if something can make me actually smile and laugh when I'm writing it or just enjoying it, that makes a better day for me. And hopefully for some of our baseball fans, it brightens their day, if only for 1 minute a day.
Now, today is an anniversary of something significant in baseball history. I cannot believe you didn't use it. We'll get to that in a second as we talk about the labor situation now, okay? I talked with an agent about 6 weeks ago and he talked about the strategy of holding firm. And I said to him at that time, Tim, I understand what you are hoping that you will get at the back end of that. But do you understand that both sides might risk the golden goose? And he goes, you might be right. And that's where we are today, Tim. On June 5th, the NBA is coming back. The NHL is coming back. A lot of sports are coming back. Major League Baseball, the Players Association remain buried in their respective bunkers. How are you? First off, as a reporter, give me your analysis of the situation.
Well, I was actually mildly optimistic earlier this week when I recognized that Major League Baseball is determined to play a season of some kind, and that Rob Manfred, one way or another, would figure out a way for this to happen, because he understands the dangers and the damage when you don't play a season or miss a significant portion. I actually thought that things were going to start to move in the right direction, and they were going to talk the players into playing fewer games, get the full prorated, play a full postseason, and be done before a next virus comes. I was actually mildly optimistic 5 days ago, and now that has all changed for me. And when you saw what the union wrote yesterday, and I've seen this buster, oh gosh, so many times over the years, 1981, 94, 95, when someone comes out and writes something like that, it just now makes me believe more than ever that I'm not sure, but I don't think we're going to play this year. And boy, do I hope I'm wrong.
Tell me how you're feeling about that as a fan, Tim, and separating yourself as a journalist.
Well, I'm really upset as a fan because I love to watch the games. I love to be at the ballpark. I love to read the box scores in the morning, and I haven't had any of that. And I've gone from the belief that anything is better than nothing. Even 50 games is better than none. And if we blow out the whole season, I had a guy tell me the other day, a guy who's been through some labor wars, he says some of these small market teams, they're not coming back. They're going to operate whenever we play again. But if we wipe out a whole season, it's going to be really, really hard for some of these smaller market teams who are going to lose more fans to bring them back if we cancel an entire season.
I wrote the other day that as this plays out, just, you know, separating myself from it, that it's like two second cousins sitting in the back pew of a memorial service arguing loudly. I'm embarrassed for them, Tim. I really am. In the current context, I cannot believe that they can't figure that out. What do you think?
Right. And Buster, you mentioned it earlier, but the fact that two other sports leagues appear to be on the way to restarting their season. And football, I'm pretty sure, at least the NFL, is going to start pretty close to on time or do things the right way. And baseball just doesn't look good in comparison to those other three sports. And we've talked about this before. The opportunity was there. The sports landscape was open for a month, maybe more, just to baseball. And at least at this moment, I don't think they're going to take advantage of that. And that's going to do more damage than almost anything.
Tim, I would love to know internally what the discussions are. I mean, really at the heart of it, forget the public discourse of what the union strategy is, because it's starting to remind me a little bit of what happened in 2016 with the collective bargaining talks leading up to that agreement that turned out so badly for the players. This whole idea of brinkmanship, of waiting and waiting and waiting and not really, and the owners have been doing the same thing. You know, neither side is really engaging. Neither side is really trying to find any middle ground. But on the union side, I'm trying to figure out what the chess of this is, because let's say that, in fact, at some point in the next week, Rob Manfred, the owners, they capitulate. Let's say they decide, because they don't want a 50-game season. You know that. I know that. So let's say that next week, in the next week, Rob Manfred comes out and said, you know what? We'll play 70 games. We'll pay you your full prorated salary. And we're going to make sure that we have some baseball in 2020, because to not have that would be absolutely devastating. In the moment, the players would win that. But the concern that I've had all along, and which is why I've thought that it was important for the players to try to parlay their leverage of the moment, is that next year the CBA is up. And if they don't really get collaboration this year, we're going to have the same conversations next spring. We're going to start hearing about a potential player strike a potential lockout during the wintertime. And so you might get a short-term win now, Tim, but what I fear is that the players, even if they get that next year the owners will be coming for their lunch and their lunch money, where they're feeling it. Right. You know what? We can't make a deal with these people. Fine. We'll relent here. But next year we're going to use the full weight of our power with a bigger pile of chips. What do you think?
Yeah, and that's what worries me so much, and has, that I think most people will agree that the owners won in the last CBA and the players are trying to get some of it back now, which clearly is not the time to do that. And I'm really worried about if this negotiation goes poorly, which so far it has, it's not just going to affect this year. It's going to affect free agency after the season. The owners are going to say, well, you guys didn't want to play. Now we don't have any money left, so we're not going to pay your free agents. That's going to drag into 2021. And then after 2021, we have to do a new CBA. It is a really bad confluence of events here, and it has to be changed, and it's got to be changed now.
I think I'm going to write this weekend that whenever this current issue is resolved, I really think it would be smart for the players to ask for an internal assessment about how we got to this point, because it is true. Look, the free agency has not played well for the players in recent years. So much of that can be tracked back to the terrible deal they made in 2016. Those low CBT levels that they negotiated for, you know, the big spending teams like the Dodgers, like the Yankees, who worked to get under that. The Red Sox working to get under that now. The fact that tanking wasn't addressed. There were no adjustments there. There were no adjustments on service time manipulation. There was no extraction of money for the BAM deal that Major League Baseball owned. And it feels like that since then, that the union strategy in following up what they did in 2016 has essentially been to not really engage and not bring ideas to the table in a way that Michael Weiner, you know, the late union leader, did so effectively for the union. And because I think at some point there has to be an assessment on the player side to look at the metrics as you would for a pitcher or a batter and say, where were we in 2015? Where are we now? And my advice to the players, not that they're looking for it, would be get Gene Orza, get a couple of labor lawyers, go in, examine the internal documents, examine all the decisions they made, and to make recommendations going forward. Because as I said, Tim, even if they win this short-term battle, and I'm not sure if that's going to be the case or if baseball is just going to get shut down, long-term, big picture, they really haven't gained anything.
Right. And that's the real concern here, Buster, is that, again, in 2000, the last CBA, one former player told me, we got a contract with Whole Foods and the owners got a salary cap. That's how some players look and some people look at the last negotiation. And that's why you told me this 2 weeks ago. We need complete collaboration from these two sides if we're going to get anything done in such a difficult environment like now, and we're so far away from complete collaboration, it just saddens me.
And I got to say, Tim, that, and I mentioned this on the podcast during this week, that, you know, Tom Ricketts doing that interview with Jesse Rogers did a great job in getting him to talk on the record. Ken Kendrick talking in recent days, other leaders of teams have come out and talk. I just feel like everybody in baseball right now is so tone deaf to how they sound in the current context, you know, with the coronavirus, all the infections, the death, more than 40 million people having lost their jobs. And then in the last week, the protests, the riots, I'm just shocked that they keep talking out loud. How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, we're in the business of getting people to talk out loud, Buster. So we have to take some blame in this, but this is not the time to be going back and forth about anything. This is the time to keep things quiet, not say a word, and let's go get something done. Like we've seen over the years, Buster, when Michael Wiener was in charge, suddenly the CBA was finished. And no one even knew they had truly started it. That's how good he was at that. And that's what we need right now. We need them to burst out one day to say, all right, we have an agreement. Here it is. Instead, we get all sorts of stuff from both sides saying we're in a lot of trouble here. Well, I wonder why.
All right. Today is an important anniversary in baseball history, and that would be the 35th anniversary of the Ferris Bueller baseball game at Wrigley Field. Okay. And the reason why I bring that up, and we heard at the top of the show, you know, Ferris Bueller, Cameron doing their call. Hey, bada, 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 swing, bada. First off, I know that you are generally speaking, in terms of pop culture, you're behind the rest of the world. Yes.
Yes. I'm behind everyone in the rest of the world.
But did you see Ferris Bueller?
Of course. I love movies. I just don't know anything about art or pop culture or anything like that.
Okay. So I'm glad you saw that movie. But the reason why I bring this up is what I fear is if Rob Manfred uses his authority from the March 26th agreement to effectively ram a 50-game season down the throats of the players, that you are going to have a lot of players – who are not going to participate, and some of them for absolutely legitimate health concerns, especially in the face of some of the rising numbers in different states of the coronavirus. You might have some players with underlying health conditions, family members, underlying health conditions. And then there'll also be some players, as we talked about in the last couple of days, who will look at the math of this, especially prospective free agents, who will say, you know what? This doesn't make any sense for me to participate. So I fear that if there is an attempt at a short baseball season this year, there will be a lot of Ferris Buellers, Tim, who will just take the time off. What do you think?
Yeah, and again, Buster, I told you a month ago, I spoke to someone I really trust, and he told me, Tim, everyone's going to play. No one is going to allow 24 teammates to go to spring training and start a season, and one of them sits home and says, I'm not playing. That was a month ago. And a month later, I think he's wrong. I think there will be more than a few players that will say this is not worth it. And if more than a few say it, then who knows how many after that will follow. That will be the worst case scenario. And let's just pray we don't get to that point. There's still time, Buster. There is still hope. But it is really getting late.
I talked to Clinton Yates yesterday about a couple of examples of players who might fit that bill. And let me throw one at you, George Springer. Okay, his career started with his service time being manipulated. You know, his ascent into the big leagues was held back probably about 2 or 3 months, and so he came up short in the fall of 2019 of free agency by just a handful of days. If he'd been a free agent last fall, he probably, in a winter in which Anthony Rendon got $245 million, George Springer probably would have gotten $180 to $200 million. Now, with everything going on, if, in fact, there's a short baseball season leading up to when George Springer would be a free agent, he might only have 50 games. You, of course, have the inherent risk of injury going into free agency. There's always the question of small sample size. What happens if George played and he batted 200. To me, Tim, I don't see the upside for a player in Springer's position to play in those 50 games any more than, as I've been saying, you know, a college junior who's expected to be one of the top five picks in the NFL draft to play in a bowl game. What do you think?
Yeah, look, he fits the mold perfectly, but we both know him really well. He's a great kid. He loves to play. He's really smart. So in the end, I think he will play, but I think it's possible that let's say he doesn't play, that certain owners will say when free agency comes around, well, we don't want any part of that guy because he didn't want to play the 50 games. When 95% of the players were out there, he was not. And it's possible with the anger between the both sides that someone might decide to punish him and not give him what he deserves because he didn't play those 50 games. I repeat, I think George Springer would play if the opportunity arose, but you make a good point.
Oh, boy. I wish we had something more hopeful to talk about, Tim, but that's where we are on June 5th. Hopefully over the weekend, as we've been hearing, cooler heads will prevail.
I sure hope so, Buster, because the country needs this, the game needs it, we all need this, and there's got to be a way to get this done.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay, Buster, see ya.
As we were talking about, here's Tim Kirkchin's Daily Baseball Fix about Chipper Jones.
Hi, this is Tim Kirkchin, and on this date in 2008, Chipper Jones hit his 400th home run. I believe he's one of the five greatest third basemen of all time and one of the five best switch hitters of all time. He was the number one overall pick in the 1990 draft. The pre-draft meeting with the Braves took 30 minutes and Chipper agreed to sign. His father, who was acting as his agent, took him upstairs and said, "Chipper, you can get way more than this." And Chipper said, "I know, but I want to be the number one pick. I want to play now, and I'm going to make so much money playing this game, I don't need it all right away." Of course, he had a great rookie year, and when it was over, he received a ball from one of his baseball idols, Cal Ripken, who signed it. "Congratulations on a great rookie year. Now comes the hard part." And Chipper told me he has that baseball today on his desk as a daily reminder of what it takes to be great.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. And Todd, today we're going to be talking about the ballparks in Cincinnati. But first, I just want to get this on the record. Taylor, you can jump in here too. I'm feeling like there's been like this victory dance on my head in the last week over the weekly quiz. And Taylor, you've been stoking this, okay? And I feel like an older Tom Brady who's got tons of championship belts in my closet from the weekly quiz. And you are, we're only a third of the way in this year, and you basically have been declaring victory. And Todd, I feel like you're stoking them too.
I'm just putting facts out here, Buster. The numbers don't lie. The fact of the matter is, it's the first week in June. The season, if there were an actual season, things would be getting late early, as Yogi might say.
Uh-huh.
So were I you, I might think about a roster shakeup. You might fire the manager. But if I were Taylor, I'd feel pretty comfortable about what's going on right now. And numbers don't lie.
Hey, all right. The bleacher tweeters, I'm just responding to them. You know, I don't want to it's tough for me to be humble in this scenario. You know, like what else am I going to do, Buster? I don't take pleasure in it. But, you know, if the people want to hear from me, then I got to speak out. And I think they want to hear from you, too. So I'm glad you're addressing the situation.
Yes. Derek Jeter once said that once you get past 30, if you have a bad year, they start talking about you being old. And I'm a proud champion. I'm just going to let you know that, okay? I've had comebacks in the past. I'm just going to let you know that. So as we move forward, I just say watch out. But go ahead, Todd. Let's talk about the ballpark in Cincinnati. First off, what do you got for us in the current structure?
The birthplace of professional baseball, Cincinnati, Ohio, Buster, the great American ballpark. And it's so interesting because just in looking at stuff and prepping some notes for today, I could not help but think that I walked past there on March the 6th. I was out there. I was doing college tours with my youngest daughter. It feels like a million years ago. I walked past Great American Ballpark. So much has happened since then. But at any rate, Cincinnati, great city for baseball. They love the sport, to say the least. And I think Great American Ballpark has some big pluses. It's got a downtown location. Such a festive atmosphere as you enter the ballpark via Crossley Terrace. I love the fact that the Reds and the ballpark do such a great job in celebrating Cincinnati's 150-year history of professional baseball. I love the statuary. I love seeing the mosaics of the big red machine. and of the 1869 Red Stockings. So as an aesthetic guy, I like the look of the place. It's a little choppy. The transitions from area to area in that stadium are not the cleanest. There are some gimmicky elements in terms of the design of the place, to be sure. You got those big smokestacks out there, which are a little overpowering at times. And you've got that riverboat thing. But all in all, it's a pretty good place to see a game.
I'd say this, is there, as you were talking and I was thinking about the ballpark, is there a bad look for a ballpark next to water? Because it feels like it's a guaranteed thing to make a ballpark better to be next to water. Am I wrong?
No, you're totally right. And every single week we use this expression, and it applies here. The immediate surroundings, the hills, the river, you know, they impart a great sense of place, right? I mean, It feels and looks like Cincinnati, and even exiting the ballpark along the riverside, you really feel like you're in a unique place, which is something that's great. And of course, we'll talk about Riverfront Stadium, which, regardless of the fact that it was directly next door to the Great American Ballpark, had no sense of place. A giant concrete donut that you could not you had no idea where you were unless you were standing outside.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I will tell you that, and I, again, you and I look at these at ballparks differently. I look at it from a perspective of utility. I'll never forget when I walked in at the field level to the ballpark there and thinking like I could reach out and touch left field. Like, you're like, oh, my God. This is going to be an unbelievable place for hitters. And it really has turned out to be that way. I love going to games there. And I think partly because in the back of my mind, I'm always comparing that ballpark, Todd, to Riverfront, which you described it perfectly. It might as well have been any other. And there was no colder press box than in Riverfront. You would go in. The press box was housed in concrete. And it didn't matter if it was 80 degrees. In the press box, it was going to be 35.
Yeah, I mean, and Buster, you know, these ballparks, you talk about utility, these ballparks, which were municipally funded and meant to house various sports back in the late 60s, early 70s, part of the reason that they had such a cold sense of sameness was because of materials. They're all made of concrete. They were, you know, they skimped on certain things. Like amenities, like a press box for you pampered reporters, this kind of stuff, maybe elevators in favor of ramps, things like that. And they were charmless. And we had this discussion last week when it came to Three Rivers. We talked about it a couple of months ago already at this point about Philadelphia. When we get to St. Louis over the next couple of weeks, that's a little bit different. And I'm recalling, and we'll save all of this for when we do talk about St. Louis, but Busch Stadium was a little bit of an outlier for that generation of stadium.
What do you got in Crosley Field, which closed in 1970?
Wish I could have gone there. Wish I knew more about it.
Yeah.
You know, you look at pictures of that, and, you know, if you can get through mostly black and white and get past the signs on the outfield fences and so forth, it still looks like Cincinnati. It has those rolling hills and the birthplace of night baseball, 1935, Larry
yep.
McFadden, great innovator. Of course, before that, Palace of the Fans, the 1919 World Series, the 1939 and 40 World Series. Looks like a great place to have seen a game.
All right, let's get to this week's meet, okay? It's the quiz. I'm ready. Go ahead, Taylor. You're going to be going first this week.
All right. Let's rumble, Buster. Let's do it.
Kevin Millard, don't let me win today. All right. This is the only National League franchise to appear in four consecutive World Series. Is it the Cardinals, the Dodgers, the Cubs, or the Giants? Only NL franchise to have appeared in four straight fall classics. Cardinals, Dodgers, Cubs, Giants. Do it.
Let's go Cardinals.
This is really frustrating because I know this is one I should absolutely get. Gosh, four straight World Series. And I'm going back through. Giants.
Well, Buster was a Cub reporter back in 1921.
Yeah, baby!
324, so he remembers.
Wow. All right.
Wow.
On the board. The
turning point. Is this the turning point? I mean, come on.
Of course it is. You guys started talking smack. You weren't talking smack, but you were throwing a little gas on the fire yesterday. And I'm telling you, I'm like, Tom Brady, you know, there's a minute and a half to go, and I'm driving. And I just got a first down, 20 yards, and I'm coming back. Todd, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Friday. First up, Justin Simmons at Justin Lance Sim 1 writes in, when talking about Mays on the show the other day, it came up that he was from Alabama. So is Hank Aaron. What state has produced the best Major League Baseball talent per capita? Can any state beat the Mays-Aaron combo of Alabama?
Yeah, Justin, a few weeks ago when we talked to Charles Barkley, that was a fun part of the conversation, how, you know, Charles is a basketball Hall of Famer, an all-time great, son of Alabama, getting to meet Willie Mays and Hank Aaron. No, I don't think – look, when you start with Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, that's pretty hard to beat. Mm-hmm. You know, you might – I know Maryland's got Babe Ruth and, you know, California has Barry Bonds. Nobody's going to beat Mays and Aaron.
Quite the 1-2 punch there. Roll Tide. Yep. Aaron at Aaron San Diego writes in, love the baseball card combo with Clinton Yates. I always joke that we should make baseball cards of other careers. If we made cards of baseball analysts, what stats would be most important on the back? What poses would we see on the front? Buster, what would your reporter baseball card look like?
Well, forget me. I was thinking back to our conversation with Matt Viscursion, where, you know, he ranked the current home run calls, signature home run calls from current announcers. That would be kind of cool, like written on the back. Rank number 2 in the rankings of home run calls among current announcers in 2020. You know, that would be a neat thing to have on the back. On Tim Kirkchin, you might say, you know, has covered 40 straight World Series, something that he mentions, you know, and where that would rank all time among reporters. So I think that would be some good stuff.
And a sneaky good pickup basketball player. I think you'd have to put that on a team.
Yeah, that's not going to be in the back of his baseball card. Or, you know, played with Cal Ripken maybe would be one for Tim.
Okay. Last one up for today. PK Steinberg writes in, Buster, have you ever been to Olney, Maryland? And for those that are not familiar with Olney, Maryland, it is a classic suburban town just outside the nation's capital in Montgomery County. And the most famous resident, I guess currently, your formerly favorite wide receiver, Stephon Diggs, is from Olney. Have you ever been?
No, I haven't been. I didn't know that about Stephon Diggs. And I'm a Vikings fan, which is why he's no longer my favorite wide receiver. It's interesting. I can always tell where people are from based on how they pronounce my last name. Because like yesterday, I did radio in Philadelphia in WIP. And anytime anybody's from the Philadelphia area, it'll be Buster Olney, like A-L-N-E-E versus O-L-N-E-Y. No, but I've never been to Olney, Maryland. I've never been to Olney, Pennsylvania. And I think there's one in Indiana as well.
All right. You're a national guy. I'm sure you get that question all the time. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please subscribe, rate, and review to this fine podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And also, one more thing I want to quickly note. Next week, the Major League Baseball draft is going on ESPN Wednesday night at 7, Thursday night at 5 Eastern. Only 5 rounds this year, so you don't want to miss it. And for more coverage, definitely check out ESPN.com.
Yeah, let's get Kylie on Monday. What do you think?
Absolutely.
I think he'd be a good guest for Monday, and he'll give us the late. Kylie McDaniel will give us the latest on how names are moving up and down on the draft board. And I've seen in recent days, for example, that some highly touted prospects, high school prospects, have decided to go to college instead of participate in this year's draft. And I'm sure that's going to shake up the draft board that Kylie's going to tell us about on Monday. That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Todd, and Taylor. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.